Do you have a sweet tooth, Bill McKay?
I'm afraid to say I do.
I've got very hungry after that last interview.
I know. I'm feeling the same
way. I don't
way.
Have a sweet tooth, but I still have got hungry.
Yeah, now, I'm a bit notorious on the sweets, actually.
One of your favourite subjects is how to ensure that fast building and intensive building is also good building.
Yeah.
Please pick up.
Yep. So I talked about the Kiwi Build reset a few weeks ago, and the whole of Kiwi Build's been a bit of a disappointment, but I was never too keen on the direction it was heading in, more sprawl across green fields. So I'm much more positive about the new Housing and Urban Development Authority, Kāinga Ora. And this is going to be run out of the brand new Ministry of Housing and Urban Development. They'll focus more on brownfield development. You and I have bickered a little bit about this, Catherine, but Auckland is much more porous than people think. There is a lot of empty space in there in which an agency can come in and do something quite profound, I think. Next to public transport routes, main roads, existing infrastructure, all of that sort of things, Kāinga Ora exists now, but the powers that will enable them to do stuff will be going through Parliament about the middle of next year. And it won't be limited to housing either. Their projects could focus on commercial development and tourism, etc. So we're also going to see, I know from the government, some changes to the RMA, because in my opinion, you know, it's a good thing when we're talking about the natural environment, but it's just not well suited to urban development, and it impedes a lot. It adds a lot of time and cost. People like me were skeptical about Kiwi Build from the beginning, because the first thing we say to our clients is, no, you won't have it by Christmas. Even a house alteration that requires building consent and resource consent, that's going to be a year and a half to do. So we are going to see some big moves. So the key thing here is, as I've said before, we've got the saying in construction and design, everyone wants it good, cheap and fast, but you can only ever have two of those. And politicians will want to get runs on the board fast, and their bureaucrats, their technocrats, don't want to disappoint them. So I've got a few ideas about how we can ensure quality, because that's, to me, got to be the key thing that we focus on as we start to roll out this sort of stuff.
What are the ideas?
Yeah, so the first one is this notion that design, you know, that quality costs money. Not necessarily. It's about getting the principles right. So at the end of my street, which is in Ponsonby, Housing New Zealand have put in three-story blocks. And Housing New Zealand are doing lots of building at the moment, which is great. But they tend to take a couple of standard block forms and kind of jiggle them around on the site a little bit. And these have got big balconies facing the east, facing the street, which is great. You know, it looks nice. But they don't get any sun in winter. And we're in a house just down the road, a 40 state house, pretty similar. And we have our heater on all day. And this block that's just gone in, it's got walls facing north, end walls that just, you can see the sun beating off them all day, and we're not using that free energy, that free warmth. So by just reorienting things, it doesn't cost you any extra money. And so it's principles like this all the way down to things like door handles. You know, don't put knobs on there, put levers on. Doesn't cost any different, but it makes it a hell of a lot easier if you've got your arms full or if you're a little bit less able. So cutting back on cars as well is another big one. And I know that the government is going to make some moves in that direction in terms of, at the moment, virtually every council in the country wants you to park two cars on your property and reverse them. That just eats up so much space. So design doesn't necessarily cost money. But looking at the people at the top of these organisations, such as the Ministry of Housing and Urban Design, I'm seeing business people, I'm seeing property people, I'm seeing technocrats, and I'm wondering, where is the vision coming from those people? They may well be able to run an organisation, but who will be advocating for good design? You need someone really high up there.
You have one in Auckland, don't you? Don't you have a full-time design
In Auckland, yeah. In Auckland Council, yes. So for a long period of time, Ludo Campbell-Reed has been the design champion in the Auckland Council. And he has really made the voice of design heard. And, you know, Auckland, we were hearing about how Wellington's a bit in the doldrums at the moment, but Auckland has been going great guns in terms of what's happening in the inner city and opening up space and more people places and all of that sort of thing. And he set up the Auckland Design Office. We have an Auckland Design Manual that has examples of good design in there. And our cities for most of the 20th century, and the debate in Wellington is all about traffic, but our cities have been designed by traffic engineers for the last 75 years or so. And we need a new focus on people and places and public transport. And that's only just developing now. So we need a design champion up at the top there. And along these lines, the Institute of Architects is advocating for a government architect. And I'm not sure, this is not in the old sense of a public works department, Ministry of Works kind of thing, someone responsible for ensuring principles of good building design and urban design are incorporated. So I think that's a good idea, and it's along the lines of this design champion that has worked so well in Auckland. Actually in Australia, all the states except Tasmania have these government architects as well, with only a small team of a dozen, but they kind of ensure that we'll quote, and this is a quote from the Minister of Planning and Housing in New South Wales, ensuring that we'll design places that are appealing, livable and successful for communities happen. And it's all very well to have those words, but you've got to have those people in there to make sure that those words turn into realities.
Where else could you get that kind of vision coming into things?
Yeah, so the government is also, I know it's planning to develop a national policy statement with much more about design in there. But again, we come back to the problem of kind of sitting on a piece of paper that sounds very nice, but how, who will ensure this happens? One thing that does work well in Auckland, I think, is urban design panels. And that's a panel, if you're designing a commercial building or a library or something like that, you run it past as a voluntary process, but under the umbrella of the council, you run it past a panel of your peers, architects and urban designers, and you get feedback on the design. It's like what we call a crit, a critique that we have in the architecture schools that we've all grown up with. And that really has, I've seen it lead to significant improvements in proposals, but currently it's only voluntary. But it allows an assessment of design quality rather than just kind of having the process at the moment that we've got where we have rules and you tick boxes saying you comply with those rules, whether they make sense or not. And then finally, the big two for me, the public. Proper consultation with communities and stakeholders. And I've had experience, the Waterview Tunnel, when I lived in Waterview, I was on a community liaison group there, the Well Connected Alliance. They did an excellent job of the consultation on that. And we got really good urban design outcomes. I've also been on a couple of terrible ones that I won't mention that were just top-down tick box exercises. And people have got to be more genuine about involving communities, because communities, they end up living in the middle of it, but they do know their communities and their environment very well. And then the last one is, I wouldn't call it public education, but hopefully what you and I are doing at the moment is informing the public a little bit more and encouraging them to demand more from these outfits, rather than, as we've seen with the desultory turnout for the local elections, just sitting back and letting it happen.
Interesting. I was just reflecting on Matthew Hoosen's comments on how the perception is the power's not there, and that's part of the disconnect, that local bodies don't have enough power to make some of the most important decisions affecting people's daily lives. So we might pick up on that in a future conversation as well. Bill, thanks very much. Bill Mackay, Senior Lecturer in the School of Architecture and Planning at the University of Auckland.